Every Sunday at 9:35, we are joined by Jeffrey Johnson. He is the international affairs columnist at the Kingston Week Standard. Joins us each week to talk about what he's been writing about this week. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Happy Sunday, I suppose.
Good morning, Andrew. Happy Sunday. There's never a dull moment in international relations these days.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't your column kind of strike harder given what's happened the last couple of days? Because you were writing this week kind of using the Ukrainian conflict to kind of jump off about how we need to prevent a global war, and then we kind of see more about what's happening in the Middle East this weekend. I don't know if you wanted to talk about what's been happening in the Middle East. I know you've been following it. There's no question about that. But yeah, where do we start?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you write a column about the international system, you know it's going to be either out of date or updated within days. Yeah, so the latest developments in the Middle East, the massive Iranian attack on Israel, demonstrates that the international order is very precarious. And we do know that there are links between Russia, which is attacking Ukraine, and Iran, which is an international sponsor of terror and also manufactures drones and missiles that are used by Russia to attack Ukraine. And what we saw yesterday between Israel and Iran was a retaliation by the Iranians for a recent a surgical strike by Israel against a consulate, or an Iranian consulate in Syria, in which a number of military officers from Iran were killed. They were on the kill list of the Israelis. And then the Iranians responded with a disproportionate massive strike on Israel yesterday, launching reportedly over 300 drones, cruise missiles and ballistic missiles, and the Israelis using their air defenses with the assistance of the United States, and also we're hearing today the United Kingdom shot down the vast majority of these drones, missiles, and ballistic missiles. There was no major damage done to Israel, although a Bedouin child was killed when debris from one of the missile interceptors struck the child. We do know that the Israelis are carefully weighing what comes next. U.S. President Joe Biden reportedly spoke with the Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday, and according to reporting, Biden told Netanyahu that it was clearly a win for Israel for shooting down all the drones and the missiles, and that the Israel should take the win and be very careful and not escalate the situation. We'll see what happens next. We do know that Israel has every right to defend itself, and I think we can probably expect Israel to strike those bases from which the Iranian missiles and drones were launched. This could escalate if Israel decides they're going to use this as an opportunity to go after Iran's nuclear facilities. We could see massive strikes. I don't really anticipate that, because we know that there has been tension between the United States and Israel over Israel's prosecution of the war in Gaza. We know the Biden administration wants to see a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. We know that there is tension between the Biden administration and the Netanyahu government over Israel's upcoming offensive in Rafah. The Biden administration is telling them not to go into Rafah. So I think that if Israel shows restraint in its response to Israel, and as I say, they have every right to defend themselves, but if they show restraint and don't escalate it, I think that will win a lot of support within the Biden administration, and I think this will shore up relations between the two, and this will mean that the military assistance, which is controversial within the Democratic Party, because there are elements within the Democratic Party want the Biden administration to stop supplying offensive military weapons to Israel. If the Netanyahu government shows restraint, that will be make it easier for President Biden to continue to make sure that aid continues to flow into Israel. So there are a lot of moving parts, but we're also hearing from Ukraine, excuse me, The Ukrainians are saying that the Israeli effort to shoot down all of these missiles and drones demonstrates that it can be done if you have the missile interceptor systems and the F-16s and the interceptor rockets. And they're saying, why can't we do this for Ukraine? Because the Russians have really stepped up the attacks on Ukraine in recent months and even days. And they are the Russians are destroying Ukraine's energy infrastructure, attacking civilian areas. The death toll keeps going up. And the amount of aid flowing into Ukraine has dwindled with the United States holding up funding for Ukrainian defense because the Republicans in the House of Representatives are holding up the voting on a bill that's already passed the U.S. Senate. And so we're not seeing U.S. aid flowing in. So we're not seeing additional missile systems or artillery. So Ukraine is really handicapped. And we're hearing from U.S. military leaders, unless the U.S. Turns that pipeline of aid back on, Ukraine could very much lose this war against Russia. And as we saw yesterday in Israel, air defenses are very capable of knocking down missiles and drones, and that's what Ukraine needs now. And so the question is, why isn't the United States doing this, and what is motivating the Republican Party for holding up this aid? And there was an interesting piece out in the New Republic recently, and it basically called out the Republican Party for not delivering this aid, and also raised troubling questions about, you know, are there some Republicans on the Russians' payroll? Because we know in Europe, the Russians' intelligence efforts actually do focus on buying off politicians and trying to influence policies. So these are all troubling questions, but all very relevant this morning.
Well, and particularly this morning as well, because the Kremlin has released a statement on the attack, and kind of in some ways it's saying it's watching closely, but a lot of ways it's also blaming the UN for not able to being able to kind of address this initial attack on the Syrian consulate or the Iranian consulate in Syria as well. So it's very clear that the Kremlin is allied with Iran here. So just in terms of your larger point this week about if Ukraine wins, there is a chance that, you know, there is a global world war at stake if Russian aggression is allowed to kind of go unchecked.
Yes, exactly. So Canada just released its defense policy update, and it basically states that the Russian war of aggression on Ukraine is an attack on the international rules-based system. And we heard the same thing coming out of the Munich Security Conference earlier this year. So the Lithuanian foreign minister, a gentleman by the name of Gabriel Landsbergis, I'm probably not pronouncing his name correctly, he basically said at the conference that Putin has no intention of stopping at Ukraine. And he said, quote, the only way to end this war is with Ukraine's outright victory, unquote. We also know that other countries in the area, Estonia and Latvia, are also very, very concerned because they are on the front lines of Russian aggression. And the Russians have made it very clear that they want to take back Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, which were once subservient to the Soviet Union, were once part of the Soviet Union. And these three countries, the aforementioned three countries, are a part of NATO. So if Russia defeats Ukraine, destroys what's left of Ukraine, and annexes its territory, that means that Russia will be withdrawing the map of Europe by force of arms, and then the next step for them would be to attack these countries, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, and they're all NATO members, and that would mean that there would be a world war because we would be obliged to defend them. And by the way, Canada is in Latvia. Canada is leading the mission in Latvia. It's called the Forward Land Forces. And Canada will continue to lead this mission in the coming years. And by 2026, according to the policy update, there will be 2,200 Canadian Armed Forces members deployed in Latvia as part of this NATO stabilization security mission. And this will be Canada's largest military deployment in the world today. So the soldiers, Canadian soldiers are there now, and we're going to increase our force there. So we have a stake in building up our military to deter the Russians so that we don't actually have to fight them in Latvia, and so the Russians don't make the mistake of thinking that if they can defeat Ukraine, then they can then go into NATO countries. So the bottom line is give Ukraine everything it needs to defend itself. Surface-to-air missiles, surface-to-surface missiles, cruise missiles if they need them, Patriot systems, everything they need right now to defend their skies so we don't actually have to fight the Russians in 2026.
And we'll see, you know, with the federal budget coming up this week, we'll see how much is allocated to our defense spending. But the warning very clear in your piece this week. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Johnson, international affairs columnist with the Kingston Week Standard. He joins us at this time each Sunday here on News Talk 580 CFRA. Dovetailing, kind of talking about the latest in the Middle East this morning, as well as Russia's war in Ukraine.